When a natural disaster strikes, law enforcement officers from all over the country respond in various capacities. That's how Newton County Sheriff's Office Deputy Glenn Wheeler ended up in Puerto Rico for 2.5 weeks right before Christmas. While on the island, Wheeler worked for a company that provides security to dialysis clinics owned by a company called Fresenius. Ozarks at Large's Susanna Sitek spoke with Wheeler about what it was like nearly 3 months after Hurricane Maria devastated parts of Puerto Rico. She began by asking him about the type of work he and other officers were doing there.
There's several different levels of who does this, and I work with, and all of our people work with a company, actually, that contracts with a medical corporation to go down and basically provide security is the initial reason we go. But this one was different in a lot of ways. This one turned more into, we did a lot of humanitarian stuff and a lot of aid. You know, most of the island is devastated, but the people down there are just amazing. And so we get to go initially when after the hurricane first happened, the first law enforcement that went in was purely security. But once things started to kind of get secured, then we saw a need, that the company I work with saw a need to not only provide that security for those clinics, but to help the people that are associated with those clinics. So the patients and the employees. And in furtherance of that, then we started seeing needs in the community. And I say we, I mean the company that hired us. And they have resources, and so they began providing aid and food to the people just in the community.
Okay.
And so it's both a security thing, and it's also a humanitarian aid thing. We do these both in the U.S. I mean, obviously, Puerto Rico is a U.S. territory, but in the continental U.S. and in territories. And initially, it can be pretty interesting when we first get there. For instance, Baton Rouge. We went to Baton Rouge after the floods, and we go fully armed.
So can you just tell me how sort of protection works with these services? Because I think sometimes people hear that, and unless you really have been in an area that, you know, where there's chaos and people taking advantage of that chaos. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes people hear armed guards, you know, at a clinic, and it seems like maybe a little bit of overkill.
Sure. I'll give you a few examples. One notable example is, and it made some national news, after Hurricane Harvey in Houston, some of the responders in the boats that were going out saving people were getting shot and shot at by gang members who were then stealing their boats. So while most people go into survival mode, there are a few predators out there that go into thriving mode because now all of a sudden they're in a situation where everybody's at a disadvantage and they can take advantage of that. So our job basically is armed security initially, which, again, I want to emphasize that that's our initial response. But with this company, it so often turns into so much more that is the part that is, you know, we show up armed for a very specific reason, to take care of these people that we got to take care of. But it's the part that comes next that's so special. But the reason we have to show up like that is because there are those people that will take advantage of that situation and become very violent in doing so. Puerto Rico, for instance, at first, there was a couple of the nurses that worked for this company that were robbed, and a couple of them were shot and killed initially. So
this was right after the hurricane hit.
Right after it happened and after things had just started to kind of start to regain some normalcy, because Puerto Rico is a very interesting place. It's a beautiful place, very much an island of contrast. You know, there's well-to-do and there's extreme poverty, and there's a lot of gang activity and really violent gang activity. So the gangs had figured out early on, hey, these people leaving the airport in these rental cars are carrying cash, because initially there was no credit card machines, nothing. No power, so everything was all the transactions were with cash. So they figured out early on that these people coming in to help had to carry cash. So they were carjacking and robbing folks that had just arrived at the airport and were going to work. That happened to a couple of these nurses, so we start providing the security to prevent that from happening. So our jobs ranged from everything from literally physically staying and sleeping at the clinics to secure that, to providing transportation for the nurses that are coming in from the U.S. and other places to relieve the nurses that are there. And so part of the jobs is to basically be armed escorts for the nurses to get them to and from the clinics. And if they need to go to the grocery store, we take them under armed guard to the grocery store. I mean, it's a very interesting concept.
So when you first got there, what was your impression? Were you expecting it to be better Were you expecting it to be worse? Actually, did it sort of meet your expectations?
I was expecting it to be a little bit worse than when I got there. I arrived later in this disaster. You know, some of the earlier other ones I've been in, I arrive earlier after it's over. But in this one, it was, you know, 2.5 months after the hurricane. So things had kind of returned to some normalcy. That island, though, there's going to be many parts of the island that don't have power for another year. So I said earlier, it's very much a place of contrast because some places still have everything and some places they literally lost everything. I mean, there's, you know, the homes are gone. The people are living in tents on the beach and you know, it's just third world country-ish in many places. And then in other places, it's life is normal.
Were you in San Juan or?
I was in San Juan initially, which wasn't an experience in and of itself. I will say the people of Puerto Rico are some of the most resilient, beautiful, kindest people I've ever met until they get in their car, and then that all changes. So driving in San Juan was its own adventure. It was there are no rules or mere suggestions, and it was that was my job the first few days was as a driver for the nurses in San Juan. I later got moved to Ponce, which is on the south side of the island, and I got moved down there to take over a clinic where they were having some issues with a manager. And so San Juan, and for the most part, the more touristy areas were in pretty good shape. Mm-hmm. They had power. Some of the shops were opening back up to business. There were a few cruise ships coming in. So they were, you know, trying to kind of get that rebooted. But you would go a block and it would be total devastation. You would see places where there would be literally a block with Lamborghinis and Maseratis sitting on it. And a block away, it would be, you know, like something you would see in a commercial on TV trying to solicit money for children in third world countries. It literally a block away.
What about that south portion of the island? Was that
south
different?
Portion of the island? The part I was in was also is kind of the same. Ponce would have electricity. In fact, one joke I heard several times from the locals down there is the island of Puerto Rico at night is like a Christmas tree. It blinks off and on because the power would come and go. So they would restore power for a little while to a section of town, and they might have power for a day, and then it would go off again. And they might have it for a week, and it would go off again. A lot of the people at the clinic I was at I was staying in Ponce, but I was working in a town called Jauco, which is about 20 minutes away. And a lot of the people in Jauco were counting the days they'd been without power. And when I left, they were at 92. And many of them were joking about it. The people are wonderful. They're resilient, faithful, just a beautiful. Many of them had lost everything they owned, literally. And every day they would come to us and offer us food and coffee. They're very proud of their coffee. They grow their own coffee. It's really good. And, you know, they would all bring coffee they had made for us. And they wanted to make sure we were taken care of. And we were supposedly there to take care of them, you know.
So from speaking to people, what are they kind of saying that they need most? Or what are they sort of wishing would happen?
Well, power is a big one. And the infrastructure down there was just so bad to begin with. And I will say, I've seen a lot of news and heard a lot of news about the feds not getting aid down there. And that's not exactly the truth. Part of the situation is stuff is getting there, and then it gets bogged down in the local government. The local government's fairly corrupt. There's a lot of aid sitting there waiting to go out, and it's either not being distributed or it's being distributed where it shouldn't be distributed. In other words, it's being redirected, so people are lining their pockets. But there actually is aid coming into the country. FEMA was on the ground hard down there. There's a lot of them down there. So it's happening, but it's a very interesting place. Just to give you an example, let's say Fayetteville, Arkansas, if we had the power out, we would call in power crews from all over the area, and pretty soon they'd all work together and get it back up, and it just doesn't work that way down there. It gets so tied up in local red tape that it takes days and days and days to start a project. It's just, it's a different, what's the word? It's a different culture. The people are very, very much not like that, but the powers that be are. Many, many of the people you talk to down there that live there and just have to live there, or not have to live there, they want to live there, but that they would prefer statehood.
Was your overall impression from people that they do feel like they will get back to where they were at least before the hurricane? Or are they sort of resigned to the fact that it will either, A, take a really long time, or B, may just not be possible?
Yes, A and B, both. They're not sure it's possible. If it is possible, it'll be a long time. A phrase I heard over and over and over from the people in there was the new normal. This is the new normal. and they just kind of expect. So one thing that's going on is you have one of the power plants was devastated. So they're trying to get power from one side of the island to the other. And to do that, you have to cross a fairly rugged mountain region that has been absolutely devastated. But even once you get into these towns, the infrastructure is just so, so poor. You know, it's just going to take a very, very long time to even get close to back to where they were.
So when you started kind of offering some of this humanitarian aid as opposed to just security, what kind of things were you guys doing?
We were helping distribute some of the FEMA stuff that got out. Also, Fresenius, the company that owns the dialysis clinics, they started providing stuff. They all along provide food, water, shelter, generators, gasoline, whatever they need for their employees and their patients on some level. To their employees, they would provide a generator to each household and gasoline to run it and gasoline for their vehicles. And they provided food for the employees and for the patients and water. They bought washing machines and dryers and put them in the clinics that were, most of them were running on a generator, the clinics were. If a clinic didn't have a generator, they would buy a large generator and put it there. So the employees could come to the clinic and do their laundry and shower and stuff that, you know, you and I would take for granted every day that's just not possible there. As they started to see the need within the community, they expanded that into also providing just for the people of the community. So if we had, you know, 10 pallets of food to give out to the employees and eight of them were used by the employees, we had two left, we started taking those into the towns and up in the mountains into the villages. And at some point along the way, we actually, some of our people actually started driving through areas that we had not been to see what the needs were, and we just carried stuff with them and would hand those out to locals. And there's so many wonderful stories of just people that had just resigned themselves, that they were just, you know, they were just out of luck. And then all of a sudden these people showed up with food and they were just, it was an amazing experience to be a part of that.
So obviously you worked with some people in the medical profession. Mm-hmm. And there's been some talk about whether the death toll is really what the administration in Puerto Rico says it is.
Right.
Did you hear any stories from people that work there that said, it might be more than that?
I did not.
I'm not sure if you got into conversations
not, but I will say that during these expeditions, if you will, and it was expeditions because you had to sometimes four-wheel drive and basically saw your way into these villages 2 months later. You know, you'd start door-to-door handing out water, and they'd say, there's no one there. They've all died. So, I mean, there was a lot of death from it. I don't know the numbers. I don't know how they compare to what the official numbers are. After seeing how things work there, I would say probably there's some discrepancy. But I don't know that. I would just
right, just from what you've seen, yeah.
Based on what I saw down there, yes.
So is there any particular kind of moment during your visit, it's hard to call it a visit or a trip. It's more than that, obviously. But was there a moment that kind of stood out to you that you'll remember for a long time at all?
Let me tell you something. I saw it several times, but the first time I saw it was pretty special. At the clinic, the UPS truck backed up to the door, and he opened the door, and the truck's just packed full. And it's almost all Amazon stuff, which at first kind of took me aback. You know, I'm thinking, that's kind of weird, but come to find out, most everything in the truck was for this particular clinic. And as I talked to the lady, the social worker at that clinic, who was kind of my main contact and just a wonderful person, and she explains to me that the company had given every employee in Puerto Rico, it was either $2,000 or $3,000 of Amazon credit to get what they needed for their home. And of course, this is 2 weeks before Christmas, so they're starting to load those Amazon boxes, and the nurses from the clinic are coming in, and they're clapping and dancing and crying. I mean, weeping. And I'm thinking, oh, they must have got their kids Christmas presents, you know, or something. They're so excited. And when they start opening their boxes, and it was bed sheets and soap and shoes for their children, it kind of put things in perspective that they have lost so much that they're weeping over the fact they can now put sheets on their bed or have soap or shoes for their children. And so I saw that several different days as these shipments come in. But the first time it came in, it was very humbling, for one thing. This opens up, and it's these necessities that we take for granted every day, and they're weeping over them. And this is 3 months after, 2 to 3 months after the hurricane, and they're still in that situation. So that left a pretty lasting impression on me.
Well, Well, thank you so much for stopping
always
by.
Always enjoy it.
That was Newton County Deputy Glenn Wheeler speaking with Ozarks at Large's Zuzanna Sitek. Wheeler says he is one of more than 200 Arkansas law enforcement officers who've gone to provide security services in Puerto Rico through the company that employs him.